Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Rimebo. And Jeff, we're going to need a bigger show. We've got so much to talk about. We'll do our state of the franchise again today. We're going to look at the Los Angeles Chargers, the Carolina Panthers and the Cincinnati Bengals. But the new league year officially starts, Jeff, on Thursday of this week at 9 o'clock UK time. Free agency opens and there are so many moves and ramifications to discuss even before we get to that deadline opening.
Yeah, you know what? This is the incredible time of year when, you know, teams that have struggled or teams that have dominated are all working for the same thing, and that's to try and find a way to get better. And Neil, I watched the combine with great interest. I thought it was, from a defensive player standpoint, the best combine I've seen maybe ever. I mean, it was impressive what those defensive players were able to do.
Yeah, Jeff,
factors into all of this.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? I mean, just on the combine and on the draft itself, looks like it's going to be a good one for defensive backs, for edge rushers. I mean, is that how you sort of saw what happened in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I did. I thought that when you talk about everybody talks about Myles Garrett as the number one edge rusher, and I don't think he did anything at all to hurt his cause. Matter of fact, kind of solidified in maybe people's minds a couple things. But, you know, you look at some of the other guys, just, I mean, you talk about athleticism. There's a kid out of Temple that just, I mean, blew me away. I mean, and I don't know if he's going to be a 4-3 hand on the ground end or he's going to be a 3-4 outside linebacker. But, you know, as you watch the combine, that whole group of D linemen was incredibly athletic and fast. They were long. But the one group that really, really, to me, stood out was the defensive backs. I mean, it was 4-3, 4-3, 4-4. I mean, they could all run. I mean, the kid that was born in Britain.
Yeah, Obi.
From Connecticut. Yeah, just absolutely. I mean, the guy's 6'4 and 230 pounds, and he ran like he ran and jumped. I mean, it was like, where do they get these guys from?
Yeah,
now, the problem when you look at him on tape, the tape doesn't measure up to the measurables. But Neil, you know how that's going to affect those general managers and personnel guys and coaches, and they're going to say, well, we can get him if he can do that. We'll find something for him to do.
Yeah, Obi Melifonwu had the second longest broad jump in combine history. He leapt 11 feet 9 inches. He ran a 4.4 40-yard dash. A 44-inch vertical leap, which was up there with Julio Jones. He was faster than the likes of Devin Hester. You're right, Jeff. I mean, I tell you what interests me with the combine, Jeff, is you listen to it's a chance to catch up with all of the coaches and to hear the coaches speak, at least, you know, even if you're not there. You hear them speak and you can get their impressions on how they're going to take their franchises forward. And a number of them said that this week that what's important about the combine is the interviews. And, you know, John Elway was talking about that. You get to sit and listen to what the player knows about football. You get to learn about them as a person. But then Anthony Lynn, the new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, whose team we'll get to in a few minutes with the state of the franchise, he was saying that the combine allows you to validate what you see on tape. So you've still got to take what you see on tape, right?
Absolutely. And to me, you know, if you say, okay, give it percentages of where you put your most stock, to me, and I think this is always the way it is, the coaches tend to put more stock in the tape, and the personnel guys tend to lean towards the measurables. But I think in general, you want to really make sure that that guy can demonstrate that he's a football player. Because some of these guys, this has become, and I think this is really interesting now too, that the training for the combine, Neil, has become an industry unto itself.
Including the
because,
interviews.
Yeah, exactly. All of it. Every part of it. How you carry yourself, your body language, how you speak to people. And additionally, these kids have practiced those drills over and over and over and over again. And, you know, frankly, now in the off-season conditioning programs that are going on in college football, a lot of the drills that you see in the combine are mimicked. So these kids have years of running those drills, and they go away once they finish their college careers. If you feel like you're going to get invited to the combine, you immediately, when you sign with an agent, he sends you away. You go train somewhere and, you know, speed-specific things, and you're working on those combine drills, and you rehearse your answers to the questions that you're going to get in the interviews, and, you know, all of it is really, really, really well practiced and rehearsed. And frankly, that's why the combine in some ways doesn't give you some of the indications that it maybe gave you 10 or 15 years ago when it wasn't an industry, because some guys are making a living on just preparing guys for the combine.
Yeah, and Jeff, even once all that research is done, we never quite know what you're going to get in the draft, which is what makes it so fascinating. And I'll give you a couple of examples, because this week, so NFL UK are moving offices in April. So I've been charged with, I have a little desk in there when I'm in the office, and I was charged with cleaning out a cupboard that was next to my desk, which I don't think has been touched for years. And in that cupboard, I found a soccer magazine called Roy of the Rovers, which was from December 1981. So I was 9 years old. I don't know how I ended up bringing it into work and keeping it there. I had NFL Europe fact books from 1991 in there, a record that the London Monarchs players brought out in 1991 called Yogo Monarchs. Jeff, there was a brochure in there on hair loss. I'm hoping I was giving it as a joke. I hope I didn't keep it for real. But I found a draft magazine from 2009, and this is how quickly things change in the NFL and how you can never quite be sure. In the quarterback prospects, Matthew Stafford they've got at number one. But the next two are Mark Sanchez and Josh Freeman. Josh Freeman's not even in the league anymore. Mark Sanchez is a backup. You move on to defensive ends. Their top defensive ends are Everett Brown out of Florida State, Aaron Maybin out of Penn State, and you have to go all the way down to, let's have a look. Where's Michael Bennett? Michael Bennett was number 14 overall in those defensive ends. I mean, it's just, these magazines are great when you stumble across them and you look back sort of 8 or 9 years later, because the draft still remains a lottery no matter what happens at the combine.
There's no question. I mean, you know, I'm looking at this thing right now, and, you know, basically the benchmark for speed, Neil, as you know, is 4.4. Anybody can run 4.4. You know that guy can run. Well, you know, there were eight guys at the combine, or more than eight guys at the combine, who could run 4.4 flat or under. Now, that's unbelievable. But the bottom line is, those guys aren't all going to be all pros.
No.
I mean, some of those guys are guys that, frankly, you may not have heard much about, but really blew it up when they ran their 40.
Well, Jeff, there's a receiver in this magazine by the name of Darius Heyward-Bey, who you will recall.
Yeah, boy.
Ran very fast.
Yeah. You know, and is John Ross, who ran 4.22, the fastest time ever at the combine, is he going to be that guy? Is he going to be Teddy Ginn? Is he going to be, or is he going to be, you know, the next Tim Brown? I mean, who knows? That's the greatest thing about this whole deal, is there is no certainty. There is no locked-in guy as a can't-miss guy. I mean, remember what everybody said about Jadeveon Clowney when he was coming out. Mm. You know, best outside rusher they've seen, and, you know, da-da-da-da, can totally dominate games. But there were questions, and now he's just now, or it had been, I think, 3 or 4 years in, just now starting to make the impact that everybody thought he was going to make immediately. I saw somebody said Myles Garrett. Now, this is some sort of, because they never name these guys' names that make these comments, but some GM, they said that he's a front office guy in the NFL,
yeah,
said that Myles Garrett is a job saver of a player.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot to put on a guy.
There's no pressure there, Miles. I mean, this is what we do, though. We kind of build them up, and I think the people behind the scenes, Jeff, are sometimes making those kind of statements filled with hyperbole because they're not putting their name to it. It's very easy to do that. We had the unnamed scout last year who questioned Eli Apple because he couldn't cook. I mean, it's sometimes we get into sort of ridiculous phrases at this time of year. One thing I did want to pick up on, Jeff, with the combine, then we can move on to talk about free agency and then into our state of the franchises. I listened to an interview with Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, and he talked about how he's not over that Super Bowl loss, and he doesn't think he ever will be, but he's moving past it. And I just listened to the whole tone of his interview, and I mean, the Falcons are going to be such a case study for mental strength and overcoming adversity in any sport this year. They're going to be a fascinating watch. And I came away from that interview thinking, well, at least they're in good hands at the head of the ship, if you will. I mean, he's saying all the right things, and he's kind of giving the impression that he's learned from, you know, he talked about the play calling in the second half and, you know, doing things differently. I mean, it was just everything I've heard from Dan Quinn since the Super Bowl suggests that the Falcons are in good hands. No doubt he's got a huge challenge on his hands, but I like what I'm hearing from him.
Well, you know, it's really interesting with him because when we were at the Super Bowl the previous year, I was introduced to a guy in Chicago who's from Chicago that does work with high-level executives in all fields of endeavor. Mm. And we were talking about how it was basically mental training and how you can train yourself to think about stimulus in your environment in different ways, you know, positive ways. And one of his clients was Dan Quinn. And this was before, you know, his first year as a head coach in the National Football League. So he's a guy that works at that kind of thing. Now, again, the bottom line is it's got to start somewhere. But his ability in the off season and with the limited amount of contact that you're allowed to have with your players is from the first day that they get together, the first conversations they have, they've got to start working past the Super Bowl. They have to recognize it, accept it, and then just put it past them. I thought it was fascinating watching an interview with Jason Garrett yesterday. He has not talked to Tony Romo since the end of the season. And I thought that was really, really interesting to hear him say that he had not communicated with Tony. And I know that you don't talk to every player, but certainly a player of Tony's stature at his position in his position as a guy that, you know, wants to go somewhere and play and all that stuff, I would have thought that he would have had a conversation. Now, Jerry Jones, on the other hand, says he's had numerous conversations, and they've talked about everything that needs to be talked about. So here we go with the Cowboys again.
Yeah, Tony Romo is going to be one of the stories of the offseason, whether he gets released or traded by the Cowboys, where he ends up could dictate a lot of that quarterback market. And Jeff, just I want to get into a couple of releases, and Kirk Cousins got tagged with the franchise tag by the Washington Redskins after we recorded last week's podcast. But as we go into this free agency period, and last year we saw Brock Osweiler get $18 million per year to sign with the Houston Texans. We know it's an important position. You have to have a quarterback. I'm seeing that Mike Glennon might get $15 million per year.
You know what? It is absolutely crazy, isn't it? But I say that on one hand, it's crazy, but it's not crazy. It's the same thing as there is in any business where it's supply and demand driven, you know, prices. And,
right.
You know, but here's the thing. This is I wanted to share this with you, Neil, because I want to get your thoughts off of it. This is kind of the hot rumor over here. Okay, mm-hmm. So if you want to, is that Cousins may get traded to San Francisco. Romo would then be available to go to Washington. Now, that would be really hard for me to see the Cowboys giving him to Washington,
right?
Trading him in the division, or that Romo will go to the Texans, and then the Texans will have to find a way to fit all that money under the cap, which could put Osweiler on the market again.
Wow!
So that's kind of what you're hearing over here, the kind of speculation that's circulating around.
Well, I think Kirk Cousins to San Francisco is the one I'm going to be looking out for when free agency opens, because and when the league year begins, because Jeff, Kirk last year signed the franchise tag very quickly when it was offered to him by the Washington Redskins. But I know from spending time with him going into that process, he had a number of options, and he was very businesslike about the whole thing and was was willing to explore other options if they were put on the table. And I think he's doing the same again. He hasn't signed the franchise tag this time around that was offered to him by the Washington Redskins. And I don't think he would be against a reunion with Kyle Shanahan. I don't know if you get Romo going to Washington. I don't know if Dallas would want that, kind of keep him in the division, see him twice a year, and the nightmare scenario of him dumping the Cowboys out of the playoffs or something like that. But I think we should definitely keep an eye out for Kirk Cousins. And of course, those opening few moments of the league year a couple of years ago saw Sam Bradford traded from the Rams to the Philadelphia Eagles. It saw Jimmy Graham go from the Saints to Seattle. I mean, it's not just free agency signings. There is going to be a hive of activity, and that could just be one of them. I mean, we could see Jimmy Garoppolo as well get moved by the Patriots. Is AJ McCarron going to get moved by the Cincinnati Bengals? As you say, I think because there's such a need for quarterbacks, those could make sense.
Yeah, you look at, and you know, it's just such an incredible time because there's so many ways that these GMs are working to try and improve their football teams. And if you're a team like Denver, if you're a team like Houston, and you've got a championship-ready defense on the field right now, and you recognize that keeping a team together is an extremely difficult thing to do, and you've got a defense that's good enough to win a championship for you, do you go out and say, who's the best? You both have quarterback issues. Do you say Romo's worth the chance? Because again, he's 37, he's got an injury history, and you know, but you cannot deny that the guy has won a lot of football games and a lot of big football games for the Cowboys. I think, you know, it's really interesting. Elway, I hear Elway talk all the time, Neil, and he mentioned it at the Combine, that he's really happy with both of his young quarterbacks. And to me, is that a message that he's sending out there that, hey, I'll give you one of them if you give me Tony Romo?
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, Jeff. It's all, you know, Belichick saying, I'm not going to trade Garoppolo, could just be driving up the price. John Elway saying, I have no interest in Tony Romo, could just be, well, I'll give you a sixth rounder for him instead of a fourth rounder. I mean, this is where it's fascinating to hear the words that come out of general managers' mouths at the moment, because they're not lying, but they're playing a game. It's part of a bigger chess match that they're involved with. You know, it's all part of it this time of year.
Yeah, and this is historical. I'm gonna go back now to, do you remember a guy by the name of Neville Chamberlain?
Mm-hmm.
All right, the Prime Minister of England,
yep.
Right? And do you remember when he met with Hitler about the Sudetenland, right? I think in 1938 or 39, early 39.
Well, I'm not that old,
and
Jeff.
Yeah, he came back. Do you remember his speech when he came back to London? Mr. Hitler has convinced me that Czechoslovakia is all he wants. He has no other interest in Europe, right? And what's the next thing that happens? here we go.
Yes.
I'm not buying it.
No, exactly. Don't buy it. But Jeff, I got into it this, you know, on Twitter. I was talking with a few 49ers fans back and forth. That, you know, I wonder if Kyle Shanahan thinks that Kirk Cousins is the answer, or that he believes in him, because obviously they worked well together in Washington. Then, even if Kirk signs the franchise tag, why would you not give up a couple of number ones? Or if you can engineer a trade where you give up a one and a three, because you've got a proven back-to-back 4,000-yard passer. You don't necessarily know what's coming down the pike in the draft. It gave you a couple of examples. Josh Freeman and Mark Sanchez were highly rated in 2009. It didn't pan out. So, I don't know. Sometimes I just think, and I know they've got other needs, and that was the argument that 49ers fans came back with. Well, we've got so many needs. But I was like, yeah, well, solve the biggest one first.
Yeah, you better close the biggest hole first, and you better close it long term. And it's not without risk now.
Sure.
There is. I mean, he could get hurt, and you know, you're tied up long-term money in him. But that's the reality of doing business, and you better close that hole first, then work on the other things. Because the problem, when you start looking at, okay, the draft is one way. Well, that position in particular is very, very difficult to have success right out the gate, unless you've got great talent all around you. Now, everybody points to Dak Prescott, right? And sure, he did. He won 13 games or whatever he won as a starter for the Cowboys. But the reality of it is he had a Rookie of the Year candidate at running back with him. He had a dynamic outside receiver in Dez Bryant. He had a Hall of Fame tight end, even though he's in the declining part of his career, in Jason Witten. Beasley, and you got the best offensive line in football in front of you. Well, you can have that kind of year much easier when you've got that kind of personnel around it. Put a rookie quarterback, take Deshaun Watson, take Kaiser, take Trubisky, take Mahomes, take any of them, and stick them in San Francisco, and they're going to struggle. I'm just telling you, that's the way it is.
Jeff, a couple of other things that happened, big headline-making news after we finished recording our podcast last week. Adrian Peterson is going to hit the open market. The Minnesota Vikings don't want to pick up the option on his contract. Would have paid him $18 million this year. He's only played 20 games over the last three seasons, averaged 1.5 yards per carry last year when he was playing. Jamaal Charles released by the Kansas City Chiefs. And a couple from the New York Jets. We did the Jets in our State of the Franchise last week. And we talked about, maybe they're not quite at rock bottom yet, and this salary cap purge is going to continue. And we both said, but you still need players. Well, Darrell Revis is gone, and Brandon Marshall is gone as well, now joining Nick Mangold. So, again, these players will hit free agency, but they might not necessarily... They're big names, but they might not necessarily command the most value for money unless somebody like Adrian Peterson gives the New England Patriots a discount.
Well, yeah, and that's already been talked about. I mean, it's... The reality of it is you're a 30-some-year-old running back who's hasn't played a lot the last couple of years because of injury. You're, in Brandon Marshall's case, a veteran, and I'm talking about on the decline of your career, receiver who has had some – he's had issues everywhere he's been. In Darrell Revis's case, you're a guy that has visibly slowed at a position where – catch-up speed and closing ability are prime requisites for the position. So each of those guys may get picked up, but they're not going to command the money, and I'll be shocked if they are, they're not going to command the money that you would think they would or would they would have commanded at the peak of their career.
Jeff, there's a question in the mailbag here from Ben Brunton, who says, what are our thoughts on Adrian Peterson to the Patriots rumor? I mean, we've also heard about him being linked with Houston, the New York Giants. I think it's going to be that kind of team for him, isn't it? I mean, he said he's made close to $100 million in his career. He has no Super Bowl ring. Is he going to pull a reverse Brett Favre and go to Green Bay and line up behind Aaron Rodgers? I mean, it's a tricky one with Adrian Peterson, because if he went to New England, which we've seen people do that in the past, Randy Moss, Corey Dillon, Revis did it for a year and got his Super Bowl ring. Chris Long did it this past season. But he could be in the game plan 1 week and then not featured at all the following week. I mean, maybe you just have to take that if you go to New England.
Well, I think he's going to have to accept that wherever he goes, Neil. He's really a back that does one thing extremely well, and that's get in the eye at depth at tailback and run the football. When he was in Minnesota, they would take him out in third down situation because he doesn't run great routes and he has hard hands. So that's what he does well. Now, where can he go and do that, as maybe a complementary back, which is probably what he is today as opposed to the feature back? Well, New England has always had that ability. Blunt was the guy that did it for him. But, there were times when you would watch a Patriot game and Blunt would get three touches in the game.
Yeah.
So he's got to be ready to take that role if that's something that, if he's going to go to a team like New England. Because New England's not going to dump their offense to put in the power running game with Adrian Peterson.
Well, Jeff, here's where it's interesting as well. I've been around the Vikings a number of years now with them coming and playing games in London. I went to training camp last year as well. Now, when I went in 2013 and I went to their mini camp, Adrian was there, but he was never on the field. He was just he was able to kind of run his own off-season timetable. I think he might have practiced the second day I was there, but I was there 3 days, and he was very rarely on the field. Now, I went to training camp last year, and the practice in the afternoon started at 3 o'clock, and Adrian Peterson kind of jogged out onto the field at 3:45, did a couple of stretches on the side, and then just stood and watched. And that's kind of typical for him. He never plays in the preseason. It's kind of what has worked throughout his career. But maybe he doesn't get to dictate everything in terms of that sort of off-season schedule and how he's, because he was clearly the superstar for the Minnesota Vikings. And as that star begins to wane, maybe he has to change that a little bit.
Well, I think probably will, and certainly I would think he certainly will if he goes to New England.
Yeah.
You know, but I just really think that if you're a team, and maybe the Giants are one of those teams that, you know, they just feel like they need a complimentary back. Now, you're talking about an expensive guy, and you're talking about a guy with injury history and age against him, but you're banking that he can come in and give you enough production to offset those things, realizing that you're probably only going to have one, max 2 years. And that's an expensive, you know, that's an expensive 2-year proposition. You have to be able to justify that inside your cap, because for every old player that you have on your roster, that's a young player you're not developing.
Jeff, I want to just rewind to one more question that relates to free agency from the mailbag, and then we'll move on to the state of the franchise and take a few more questions at the end. This one was from Scott Buckland. We kind of talked about it from the 49ers point of view, but Scott simply asks, do you think the Redskins should trade Kirk Cousins? Can they afford to keep him another year without a long-term deal? He's going to cost them $24 million against the cap if he signs that tender and they keep him for another year. I mean, Jeff, as much as it makes sense for the 49ers to go after Cousins, for me, and I'm a Kirk Cousins fan, but back-to-back 4,000-yard seasons, I keep him if I'm Washington. But the way they've played this, Jeff, with back-to-back tags, you know, Kirk's going to look at it and say, well, I've been earning $24, $25 just on the tag. So for a long-term deal, you're going to probably have to make him the highest-paid quarterback in NFL history.
Probably. I think that would be what the economics of the situation would dictate. You know, this is really an interesting deal because, you know, everybody says now, look at Washington, how they've really settled down. This is the first time a coach has made it this long. You know, I think this is the first time anybody's ever gotten a second contract from Dan Snyder. Mm. Certainly it's the longest he's ever had a longest run of one head coach. The front office seems to be there seems to be more harmony in the organization, all that. Well, this will be a real indicator to me of exactly where they are with this whole thing. Because if you let this guy go and you don't have a plan in place at that position, because again, now remember, this is a team that has playoff capability. So if they got rid of the defensive staff, they're doing all the things, quote, that they need to do to get themselves into the playoffs. Well, you better find out, if you're going to give up Kirk Cousins, you damn sure better have somebody else that you can count on to go into that position and play well enough to beat a 13-win Cowboy team, a Giants team that's good on, you know, I mean, you're talking about in a tough division,
yeah.
And the Eagles are no day at the beach when you go down to Philadelphia.
If that's the worst team in that division, the Philadelphia Eagles, you're looking at one of the toughest divisions in football. Jeff, we've always said that there's been whispers of dysfunction around the Washington Redskins signing Albert Haynesworth, trying to win the offseason every year. If they suddenly lost Kirk Cousins, Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson, and there's these kind of rumblings around Scott McLuhan, the general manager, who didn't attend the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. It was away dealing with personal matters, but there's been back and forth between him and the franchise and Chris Cooley in the media. People can check all of that stuff out with regard to Scott McLuhan's personal life. All that stuff's going to rear its head again. If suddenly you lose... Well, even if they keep Kirk Cousins, they might lose to DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon. And then, you know, this was one of the things we kind of boasted about this Washington offense was, well, they've got so many weapons. They can hurt you so many ways.
Yeah, and you know, like you say, that you start letting those kinds of players go or losing them. It's not really they don't let them go. They just choose not to have them back, so you lose them. And you say, doggone, man, where are we going with this thing? And, you know, you can't – where are you going to find a DeSean Jackson? They don't go – you know, you don't see them walking down the street every day. So, you know, Pierre Garçon and on and on and on and on. So this is an organization that's going to be watched very, very closely by a lot of people here in the next month.
All right. Well, that's free agency and the league year, which opens. So as of – this is Tuesday when we're recording this. As of 5 p.m. UK time, teams can start negotiating with players' agents. But the whole league year begins at 9 o'clock UK time on Thursday, March the 9th. And I'm going to be live blogging for the first few hours on Sky Sports website to keep everyone abreast of all of the big news that's coming up. And there will be a lot of free agent moves. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a trade or two. Jeff, a couple of years ago, we had all those trades I talked about and big free agent signings. And right buried in the middle of it all, we had Patrick Willis retiring, Jake Locker retiring. I mean, it can all kick off in the first hour or so.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, if you're an NFL fan, they better tune in to you, because that's going to be it's like a feeding frenzy. You know, it's a mating ritual. It's a feeding frenzy. It's, you know, it's crazy. Now I'm telling you.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll be all over that on Thursday night. Let's get into our state of the franchise then, Jeff, or we're going to be recording a four-hour show today. We'll start with the Los Angeles Chargers. So they became the LA Chargers on January the 12th, 2017. So they finished out 2016 as the San Diego Chargers. Let's give you the tale of the tape on the Chargers, and then we'll move into some chat about them. So they started the year 1-4. They should have been 4-1. A succession of games where they found different ways to blow it, including a fumbled snap against the Oakland Raiders when they were going to tie the game. And then Philip Rivers was caught on the sidelines mouthing, "We're the bad news bears." They had 9 losses by 1 score, including a loss to Cleveland on Christmas Eve. Offense was 14th in the NFL, 26th rushing, 8th passing. Defense was 16th, 10th against the run, 20th against the pass. They don't have a lot of salary cap room. It's the third worst in the NFL with $5.1 million to spend. They picked 7th overall in round 1. And the first thing I've written down on my notes for the Chargers, Jeff, is the battle for Los Angeles, because the Chargers logo got booed at some NBA games in the city. Players got booed when they attended basketball games in the city. I saw that, I think it was Jeremy Atashu was at the LA Galaxy game a couple of weeks ago. His reception was mixed at best. They've got to try and win over some hearts and minds in LA first.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, this is going to be an interesting one to watch, because you mentioned when you're a new franchise in town and you're some of your players are out at other games and they're getting booed already, it doesn't sound good to me. And we talked last time, and I think we've talked a couple different times about just how very difficult this city is, how L.A. is maybe the most fickle sports town in the United States. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be they have an uphill, you know, battle to fight.
Let's start with the coaches. Mike McCoy got fired at the end of last season. Anthony Lynn looked like he might get the Buffalo job, but becomes the new head coach of the LA Chargers. He hires a couple of former head coaches as coordinators, Ken Wisenhunt on offense and Gus Bradley on defense. And he talked at the Combine, Jeff, about how important that was, because he can lean on those guys because they've been head coaches and they know what's going to come across the desk. I guess he's got a lot of pieces there, but Jeff, they deal with so many injuries. I mean, it happened time and time again. Last year we saw Keenan Allen. He's now missed 23 games the past 2 seasons. With Danny Woodhead went out. Melvin Gordon finished the season with a hip injury. Manti Te'o had an Achilles. Jason Verrett had an ACL. Brandon Mebane went down with a biceps injury. Anthony Lynn said this week at the Combine, "You can't make the club when you're in the tub." But I don't know, maybe they have to look at, it's not just the mental toughness of the players. Maybe the whole strength and conditioning thing needs to be overhauled. What do you think when you look top level at this team?
Well, I think when you look at the team, you know, there's a lot of issues here. Right? We always start with quarterback, and Philip Rivers, you know, is still got his game. But he's 35, Neil, and as an organization, you now have to start to think of a succession plan. And so that's got to be in your thought process relative to the draft, right? Now, it doesn't mean you take one with the first round if there's not one there.
Right.
But somewhere in the top four rounds, five rounds maybe, you got to probably take a guy that you think might have a chance to you know, be the guy long, you know, after Philip Rivers is done. And then look at that offensive line. They are horrible.
Yeah, they're poor.
I mean, they have had struggle after struggle. King Dunlop can't play. You know, they moved DJ Fluker inside, and he hadn't been much better than he was when he was outside. Orlando Franklin struggled. I mean, that's another area where you got to get better, because your quarterback gets hit too much, and you can't run the football. That's not, you know, again, you got a great back, and you got to find a way to turn him loose a little bit, and that's number one. You got to find offensive linemen. This is not, in my opinion, past a couple guys, a great offensive line draft. So
maybe
may be a free agency area they got to clean up.
Yeah, maybe they have to look at someone like Kevin Zeitler of the Bengals as guard, because you're right. I mean, there's two of those guards that they kind of kicked the tires on them as tackles, and it didn't work, and they moved them inside. Matt Slauson was the best of the bunch, and he was the center, and he was solid at best. And Jeff, when Philip Rivers can't run, and that's not a knock on Rivers, he is what he is, and he's a Pro Bowl passer, but he's not a runner, then you've got to have protection for him. You've got to be able to keep your franchise upright. And I think too often he's hurried into passes and hurried into mistakes. I 21 interceptions this year on Rivers. I'd be interested to go back and watch the film on them. I bet there's a lot of pressure on some of those.
Well, no question about it. And you know, so you look around, and there are some free agent guys out there.
Yeah.
You know, Kelvin Beachum's out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are going to be some guys that they're going to have a chance at. But, you know, and I love Kelvin Beachum. I mean, I love him to death. But he's not a name that pops right off the top of your head when you start talking about elite left tackles in the National Football League. But because of the issues that San Diego and other teams have, he's going to make a bunch of money now. I'm just telling you.
Yes.
And you know, when you've got needs at both guard and tackle on both sides, you got some serious work to do. And, you know, you can't make it all up in the draft, and you can't make it all up in free agency, but you're going to have to combine some way to do that. Now, you look at their defense, Manti Te'o is a good linebacker. He's not the great elite linebacker that people, I think, thought he would become.
Yeah.
You know, you're outside. You got your franchise Melvin Ingram, and you got Joey Bosa. You got some guys that can rush finally. Now, again, looking at, you know, cornerback, you know, this is a team that's just not good enough, frankly. And that's hard to say, but they're just not good enough right now relative to making a run in their division, because they play in a tough, tough division.
Well, Jeff, it's interesting. Jason Verrett made the Pro Bowl 2 years ago, and Casey Hayward made it this year off the back of 7 interceptions. But again, if you're talking shutdown corners in the NFL, you're probably not mentioning Casey Hayward too far up in that conversation. So maybe that was one of those that was kind of skewed by statistics, and they certainly didn't replace Eric Weddle at safety.
No. And, you know, that's where you got to be. And it's interesting, because I heard Deion say it yesterday at the Combine. There was a kid that had 8 interceptions, you know, this 1 year starter, and had 8 interceptions. And Deion said, well, you got to be careful with those kind of statistics, because it may mean that they're throwing at you. And,
right.
You know, that may be the situation here.
I always use that example when back in the day when you watched the great Darryl Green, he'd have 3 interceptions a year, maybe 4 at best, because teams didn't want to go that way. It's the same with the very best in the NFL now. I mean, even Revis in his prime was getting 3 or 4 interceptions a year. Just don't go that side of the field.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you mentioned Weddle. And, you know, guys like Weddle are hard to replace, because they can do so many things. And that's why everybody talks about, what is the player's versatility? What can he bring beyond just being a, quote, safety? I mean, Eric Weddle could do a lot of things. He could go down and play in the slot. He was a good blitzer. He was a great tackler around the box. He could play in the middle of the field. So, again, for fans that are watching the build-up to the draft, that's what teams really want. You talk about a Jabril Peppers. Mm. That's the guy. That's the kind. If you're going to replace an Eric Weddle, you got to go with a guy like Jabril Peppers, a guy that has that kind of position flexibility.
Jeff, let's flip back to offense for a second. Let's look at a couple of young players. Melvin Gordon didn't have a touchdown in his first year in the NFL. He had 12 last year. 997 yards rushing before that hip injury ended his season after 13 games. So it looks like Melvin Gordon is the future of that club in the backfield. But Keenan Allen, as I said, he's now missed 23 games. They don't have a bad supporting crew at receiver, Jeff, but it is just that. Travis Benjamin, Tyrell Williams, Dontrell Inman. I mean, add in a banged up Keenan Allen there, and I'd say that that group is being made to look better than they are by Philip Rivers, a Pro Bowl quarterback.
Yeah, and you know, Dontrell came out of this league, and Dontrell is a good receiver. He's a good receiver, no question about it. But what you lack in that bunch is, who's your vertical guy? Who's right. your speed guy? They need some more dynamic playmaking ability at the receiver position. And you're talking about Inman is the guy that's going to catch it. And, you know, again, you know, when you get Keenan Allen on the field, he's obviously proven that he can play. But, you know, his durability is the issue. And you really would like to have a guy that can stretch it a little bit more vertically.
Let's obviously we still have Antonio Gates on the offensive side at tight end, who would be remiss not to mention, just keeps rolling along, keeps getting open, or not even getting open, but making the catches for Philip Rivers. Joey Bosa had 10.5 sacks as a rookie, Jeff. Did you like what you saw out of him as a high draft pick?
Yeah, and you know what? Well, really, I really was happy for him because, Neil, I really worry. Anytime a guy goes through the kind of negotiation and holdout that he went through, he's setting himself, as a raw rookie, you're setting yourself up for failure. And I really was happy that he was able to come back and really show on the field the things that, you know, made him a number one draft choice. And I think that kid has a bright, bright future in the NFL.
Jeff, arrow up, down, sideways. I'm going up. I'm going up. I'm going to say that they kept their two. They got Bosa. They kept Melvin Ingram. I think they've still got a Pro Bowl quarterback in Philip Rivers. There's a lot of pieces that need to be filled. They just need to stay healthy as well and find ways to win some of those close games. I think the Chargers are an arrow up team. What about you?
Well, I'm going to say arrow up for part of the reason that you just mentioned, the fact that, you know, they've gone through their off-season surgeries now. They've gone through all the procedures. Now they're healing, right? And so those guys should come back healthy. They should come back revitalized. You know, but again, it's an arrow that's inching up until I see what they do in free agency in the draft.
All right, let's move on to the Carolina Panthers. Talking of that draft, they pick 8th overall in round 1. They probably need an offensive tackle, an edge pass rusher, and maybe a running back, given Jonathan Stewart's injury history. They've got $36.6 million of salary cap room. It's 15th best in the NFL. They were 60 minutes from being NFL champions in 2015, but they became the first team in NFL history to go 15-1 1 year and not make the playoffs the following season. They finished 6-10 and missed the playoffs for the first time since 2012. They split their first couple of games of the year, Jeff, lost to Denver, then beat San Francisco. But then there was a four-game losing streak, and they kind of never recovered. They were 1-5, and they split the rest of the season. They went 5-5 the rest of the way, but the damage was done. Their offense was 19th, 10th in rushing, 21st passing, and defense, which was a big part of their success in 2015, was 21st in the NFL, 6th against the run, 29th against the pass in a year after they took the franchise tag off Josh Norman and allowed him to leave via free agency. Your overall impressions of what was obviously a disappointing season for the Carolina Panthers?
Well, you know, you talked about Dan Quinn, and this is a team that had Super Bowl hangover bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the Josh Norman thing just, you know, accentuated that. I think there was animosity between he and the club. And, you know, it was an off season gone wrong, and it continued right through the season. You know, I'm a Ron Rivera fan. I like his approach with his team. I like his steady hand. But, you know, this is, again, a team, when you start to look at this team and you break this team down a little bit, Neil, there's some holes here. They need a pass rusher. Their pass rush, because, again, they don't want to rely on blitzes to get pressure. No. Their schematically. They want to do it with four and play zone around it. I have concerns about Kuechly because anytime you start dealing with head injury, and that was a scary one that he had. You know how much Thomas Davis has left. I think Shaq, the young kid that they
Shaq
drafted
Lawson.
Out of Washington. Yeah, Shaq Lawson's got a chance to be a pretty good linebacker in the league. So, you look at the defensive front. They cut Paul Soliai. They need a basically a facelift up front and need some juice in the pass rush. And then you cut your best corner, and that showed last year too. So there's work to be done here.
Yeah, they took that.
I really think the tackles, again, the offensive tackles,
right,
Remmers and Orr, I don't see those as dominant guys, and this is a team that wants to run the ball and let Cam chunk it deep, and you're going to have to protect a little bit when you do that.
Yeah, we see a lot of those slow developing plays, the seven-step drops with Cam, and really the offensive line wasn't up to task. Mike Remmers tried to play right tackle in the Super Bowl, got abused by Von Miller. When Michael Orr got hurt, Remmers moved over to the left tackle. He's definitely not a left tackle. And Orr is still in the concussion protocol, Jeff, after getting hurt in September. So, I'm with you. I worry for Luke Kuechly long term, and that was some of the most upsetting scenes of the 2016 season, seeing, one of the biggest, strongest, toughest defenders in the entire league kind of sat on the floor, crying like a little boy, and it was, I don't say that I'm not poking fun at that. That's what the pictures showed, and it was heartbreaking. And you can put Michael Orr in that category as well, Jeff, if he's been in concussion protocol since September.
Yeah, and those are ones that you just never know about, and they're going to be ultra cautious with, and they should be. And so if you're looking at this football team and you're Dave Gettleman, the general manager, and you're starting to, formulate your free agency plans and formulate your draft plans, this is a team that, I could see jumping right back and being a playoff caliber team, or I could also see them struggling again if they don't fix some of the holes that they've got.
Where are we with Cam Newton, Jeff? Because he was hit too much again this year behind the offensive line. He complained about getting hit too much and that he didn't draw penalties like some quarterbacks around the NFL did. He generally had a miserable season as the reigning MVP. And Ron Rivera at the Combine said, we are going to see eventually a morphing of Cam Newton into a pocket passer. We're still going to use his athleticism, but he cannot be the primary runner as he has been too often for us in the past. I don't know if Cam's going to resist that move, but I don't know. Is Cam a year in, year out MVP candidate and a true franchise quarterback, one of those elite guys? Was 2015 an anomaly? Was 2016 just a down year? Where are you with Cam Newton now? We've got a good body of work. We're 6 years into his career.
Well, I think there's, if you look at his development, there's some things that can help him around him. First of all, shape up the offensive line, get him better protection. To modify the passing game. And when I say that, Neil, I'm talking about get out of the seven-step drop stuff that he has to hold the ball and let him, even if you're making single field reads, half field reads, get him some things that he can throw and get the ball out of his hand faster. You look at what he has available to him. Greg Olsen is an outstanding tight end, an outstanding receiving tight end, a tough matchup. Outside Funchess, you see a little bit of flashes, but, I'm not sure. Kelvin Benjamin, he's got to come some. Teddy Ginn, Teddy Ginn is Teddy Ginn. And so I think he needs help there. And then, again, they have to be able to run the football well for him. To me, in my mind right now, Cam Newton, as talented as he is, as physically gifted as he is not in the position that a Tom Brady is to go back there and throw it, or a Matt Ryan to go back there and throw it 45 or 50 times a game and win a football game.
Cam completed 52.9% of his passes last year. It was the worst among NFL starting quarterbacks. His quarterback rating of 75.8 was only worsened by Houston Texans Brock Osweiler and Jets Ryan Fitzpatrick. So it was a complete down year. But Jeff, one part you mentioned there was the kind of running support, and Jonathan Stewart is due to make $8.25 million this year. Maybe we see something happen early in the league year there, because isn't this a good year for running backs coming out of the draft as well? Maybe they look and build another weapon there into this team, because they, you know, when they were at their best, they kind of had a 1-2 punch at running back.
Yeah, and that's when they've been the best. And I think they're already in that process, Neil. You know, they cut Tolbert, the fullback. You know, you got to remember that in addition to all the things you talked about, Jonathan Stewart's 30. You know, so, you know, that's the magic number for backs. So, obviously, like you said, this is a year where there are some, you know, you look at the back from Florida State, you look at Fournette from LSU, you look at Christian McCaffrey from Stanford. There are some backs out there. The kid from Tennessee had a great combine. So, I that may be a place where they go when they get down around the second or third round and go there. They've got to find a way, whether it's free agency or whatever, they got to find a way to help, help that offensive football team, and they got to get some help on the defensive side, particularly pass rush and secondary.
Jeff, going to be some pressure on Mike Shuler, I would imagine, as offensive coordinator, because when we see the Patriots, where's the morphing from one thing to another with this team? It's all what you described. It's Cam on slow developing plays and then big chunk throws down the field. Well, that's fine, but sometimes you got to hit those rub routes across the middle and all those different things and change who you are. Maybe they don't change who they are enough.
Well, I think they've got to develop, that's why I said modify the passing game. They've got to develop in the passing game. They're basically a play action, bootleg, play action, post and go route team. So you look at their ability to complete balls on third and eights and third and sevens and third and sixes, where you want to be able to throw a hook route and win. And that's not their strength. Their strength is to run the football, force teams to get into an eight-man box, get single outside, and then let Teddy Ginn run past somebody off play action.
Yeah, Ted Ginn Jr. is a free agent this year.
Yeah, and you made a great point. Cam is an extremely good deep ball thrower. Mm. But he's not an accurate guy in the intermediate, and the balls that you got to complete 20 of in a game to win.
Well, he often throws that 60-yard strike downfield, Jeff. He throws it a 2-yard slant with the same velocity. I mean, sometimes see him taking his receivers' heads off.
Yeah, and that's part of developing touch and understanding and his footwork in the pocket, all of that stuff there's plenty there to work at. The good thing is you got an awfully talented guy you're working with. Mm-hmm. And if he is motivated to be a better quarterback, a better pocket quarterback, because that's what Rivera's talking about, then I'm sure he can be. Now, again, it's going to be work, and it's going to be a process, and he needs better players around him. He needs better protection and those kinds of things. But, again, you're talking about an ultimately talented player in the National Football League. Mm.
Just one thing on defense, Jeff. They re-signed defensive lineman Mario Addison and franchise-tagged K'Juan Short. Cornerback is probably an area they've still got to look at. They tried to address it in last year's draft there, having moved on from Josh Norman. They drafted James Bradbury, Darrell Worley, and Zach Sanchez. But they had a couple of games where they were giving up over 500 yards of offense. Julio Jones abused them for 300-plus in one game. That secondary has to be better.
Yeah, there's not a single guy that you mentioned that is going to be mistaken on the street for Josh Norman. And ain't happening. So, it's interesting, too. You talk about the upfront deal, and K'Juan Short, who's a good player. Right. I mean, he's a good player. So they franchise him, which makes sense. But, Addison, to me, is not an elite pass rusher, but boy, did he get a good contract. And that just shows you how important that position is, those guys that can rush a little bit off the edge.
So from 2015 to 2016, it was clearly arrowed down. From 2016 to 17, best I can give them, Jeff, is an arrow sideways at the moment. What are you giving them?
Same. I'm the same. Because, again, don't forget now that there's going to be some shakeup on that staff now. Because, you know, they lost. Yeah, McDermott, their defensive coordinator, is gone and to Buffalo. And the strength of that defense, both in the Super Bowl year and was his ability to get those guys all playing at a high level. And, you know, they were a great blitz team. And, you know, he brought some of that stuff that he had done in Philadelphia. Now you lose that, and, you know, you got to replace it. And, you know, you're talking about change. And that's sometimes change is difficult.
All right, let's move on to our last state of the franchise team for this week's podcast, and it's the Cincinnati Bengals. They went from 12-4 in 2015 to 6-9-1 in 2016 with that one tie coming at Wembley Stadium against the Washington Redskins. They missed the playoffs for the first time since 2010. They've got the 9th overall pick in round one. They've got all 7 of their draft picks in place. $43 million to spend in free agency, should they wish. It's not always been a franchise that has splashed the cash. That's the 12th most in the NFL. All the numbers are pretty middle of the pack. Offense was 13th. 13th rushing, 15th passing. Defense was 17th. 21st.
I'm rubbing off on you, Neil.
and 11th. Against the pass, 21. That's shocking. So, Jeff, it was middle of the pack on both sides. And I look actually on offense, if we start there, they lost Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu to free agency. They lost Hugh Jackson to head coaching job in Cleveland. Tyler Eifert missed the first half of the season with that injury he suffered at the Pro Bowl. When they got him back, AJ Green went out with a hamstring injury. Gio Bernard went out with the ACL. They never had their pieces in place on offense. And actually, a previous strength of this unit was offensive line. They allowed Andy Dalton to get sacked 41 times. That was the most since 2012.
Yep. And, you know, you hit on a couple of them. And then, you know, remember, Reggie Nelson had that great year at safety the year before, too. And then they lost him to the Raiders. So this was a team that got, you know, victimized in a lot of ways, you know, and then you lose Zimmer and, you know, in the last 2 years, and, you know, we talk about turnover and change, and it's, you know, the one consistent thing in Cincinnati has been, you know, Marvin there. And, you know, but the other consistent thing in Cincinnati is this is a team that somehow, some way, seems to always be its worst enemy.
Jeff, I just put that at the top of my list. We're obviously separated by many thousand miles here, but before I got into the players, I had down as a headline, discipline still an issue for this team.
No question. And, you know, Vontaze Burfict and continues to, you know, to want to play the game outside the lines, and you know, that's going to cost suspensions, and you got Pac-Man's been a problem historically, and Eifert can't stay healthy, and then A.J. Green goes down, and you know, again, the offensive line didn't play up to par because there was too much pressure put on them then, you know. And, you know, it just, you lose a few guys, you lose Sanu, you lose A.J. You think about that now. You lose Sanu in free agency, then you lose A.J. Green to an injury from the previous, you know, you look at, then compare 2015 to 2016. Well, those are huge losses. Yeah, I mean, those are monstrous losses. And Eifert's down, too. So, you know, that's no wonder they're 6-9.
Well, suddenly you and Jeff, they found some positives. I mean, if you can put a positive spin on it, then Tyler Boyd was pretty good out of the slot. You've got Cody Coreau at receiver, who they would never have expected to come on as he did late in the year. Rex Burkhead made some plays. But those aren't your first choices. If you're a Bengals fan, you're not realistically telling me you were expecting Rex Burkhead to replace Gio Bernard or Cody Core to pick up some of the slack of Mohamed Sanu. I mean, it's just because they were trying to play the hand that was dealt to them.
Right. And, you know, I think the without being a guy that's, you know, trying to find the silver lining all the time, when you have injuries, it does give guys opportunity that they normally would not have gotten. And even if they come, when you come back the next year, if they're not starters for you, you at least, you know, you got better depth because they have experience. They've been there and done that. And if they have to step in again, it's not going to all be new for them. But the names that you mentioned are certainly guys that, you know, are not what the guys you want to be your frontline guys. This was a roster, Neil, if you remember when we were doing our shows in 2015. We're talking about this is a team that has a Super Bowl roster.
Best in the NFL, you know, was some players who played against them said.
Yeah, and so, you know, that they're not. Obviously, they had a dip. They went to 6-9, but I don't think this is a bad football team.
But Jeff, what we'll see here, I think, is you know, and again, I saw it for a number of years in San Diego, an unwillingness to keep your own players. And you know, I mentioned there about the Bengals not being big spenders, but they're not big spenders in terms of keeping their own as well. And at some point, you can't let both Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu out of the building in the same year. I mean, this is just examples of that. I think Reggie Nelson being another one. At some point, you've got to keep your players. If you're building something, keep them.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do with those offensive linemen, you know.
Right.
Because there's going to be a market for those guys. Absolutely. You know, Zeitler's going to command some money, those guys are hard to find. And you know, I think this has been one of the historical issues. If you talk, and I'm not slamming the Bengals, so you know, Bengal Nation, don't send me hate mail. I'm just telling you the way it is. This for a long time was one of the franchises in the league, along with the Cardinals, that spent less money on scouting and had the smallest scouting department, and you know, was habitually had problem signing players because they wouldn't pay money. And I think they've moved in a positive direction from that. But there was a time, if you remember in history, where the Bengals were, you know, just the fans were up in arms because the organization, the Browns, wouldn't spend money. And it was perceived as they didn't care about whether the team really won or not. They were going to make sure that they ran a tight ship.
Jeff, let me tell you one first. I was in Cincinnati last summer. I got put in a room for about 3.5 hours while I was waiting for waiting for interviews to take place. I was with Jamie King from NFL UK, and we asked. We said, we've been here about 3 hours now. It's a windowless room. Anywhere we could grab a coffee, you know, is there a chance we could just get a coffee somewhere? And then they pointed us to where they back the trucks in and unload all the stuff in the bowels of the stadium. They went, "There's a vending machine down there. You'll need some dollars for it." Brilliant.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Now, here's Jim McNally is a legendary offensive line coach in the history of the National Football League, and Jim was, you know, if you check facts, I think like for 30 years. There's only been two offensive line coaches with the Bengals, Jim McNally and now his assistant, Paul Alexander, is now the offensive line coach. McNally told me in the offseason, once the season was over, when he was with the Bengals under Weish and those coaches in that era, that the personnel office, which I think was three guys, would come down and they would put they were using 16-millimeter film at that time, they would put a 2 or 3 foot high stack of 16-millimeter tape on his desk and tell him, okay, these are the guys you got to go evaluate, and then he would actually go out and do the scouts work. He'd go out and talk to the university coaches and go to the pro days and do all that stuff because they didn't have a personnel department per se, right? Wow. And this is at the same time when the Cowboys, who were, you know, winning like crazy, had 16 scouts out around, you know, all over the country. So that's been kind of the reputation that the Bengals have had in football. And again, it's moved in a positive direction. But they need, like you say, Neil, they need to make some statements to their fans. We can't have this talent drain all the time on us every time these guys get to their second or third contract, and now we just can't pay them.
Absolutely. Where are we with Andy Dalton, Jeff, as we finish up with the Bengals? He's entering his seventh NFL season. He's just completed his third offensive coordinator. He didn't have much of a running game last year. Can you win a Super Bowl with Andy Dalton?
Well, right now you would say no because he hadn't done it. Mm. And I think you got to continue to say no until he does it. Now, we thought that in 2015 that was going to be the year, and then he got hurt. If you remember that play, that freaky play on the goal line where he broke
good,
his... Yeah, and you know, and that was really too bad because I thought the Bengals had a real legitimate opportunity with that year. Now, again, he's got to get a healthy football team around him, and he's got to get some weapons back outside, and then I think we can make a more definitive answer on who he really is. But right now, you would say no. I would say he's a good quarterback, an upper-level quarterback in the league. He's proven that, but, you know, it's the same thing they talked about with a number of guys. You know, can he win the big ones? And until you do that, the answer has to be no.
They probably need some younger blood on defense, Jeff. I don't know if this is a team that's going to splash the cash in free agency. So the best I can give this team is an arrow sideways, because I don't see them getting any worse, but I don't know if they significantly improve the roster. Are they an arrow up team for you, down, sideways? Where are they?
I tell you what, I think they're kind of sideways right now, and I agree with you on the defensive side of it. You know, they got some guys. Toupe Peko's been around for 100 years. Maulunga inside doesn't run, you know, enough. I mean, you want to be faster and younger in there and cheaper. You know, they got some age in the secondary. They've got to get more athletic on defense. They've got to get more dynamic on defense. You keep waiting, you know, for Marcus Hunt to make. I mean, here's a guy they took, I think, second or third in a couple years ago, and he's really never become a starter. You know, so you hope, and now at this point in his career, he's either going to do it or they'll probably cut him. Mm. And, you know, so they've got some work to do on defense, too, get younger, more athletic.
Jeff, I'm going to take one question from the mailbag because we are way over time now. It's from the wonderfully named Sean McGrinder, who says, who do you think will have a huge go at the free agency signing? This is going to be fascinating in the coming days, Jeff, because as you just put out on Twitter a few moments ago, there are 12 teams with at least $40 million to spend. Cleveland are way out in front, $102.4 million in salary cap space. Obviously, they might have to overpay to tempt people to Cleveland, but there are a number of teams, all the way down to the Packers have got $40 million to spend. They don't normally do it in free agency. Dolphins have got $41. I mean, Titans have got $61. Pats have got $62. I mean, there's going to be a lot of teams in the mix here.
Well, I tell you what, like I say, I'm going to pump your tires big right now. If you're an NFL fan in the UK, you have to listen to Neil on Thursday, because I heard Teddy Thompson say, Neil, we're going to be active the first day. Now, that's the Packers.
Wow.
Right? Think about the Browns. You know, the listeners got to understand, you can't sit on that money. Mm. Right? You have to spend it. It's mandated by the league. You have to spend a certain percentage of your salary cap. So they can't do that with $100 million. If they're only drafting 7 or 9 guys, right? Mm. You can't spend all your money with the draft class, because they're slotted numbers, right? So they have to. Cleveland has to be active. They don't have a choice in it. So you think about them, and then think about the Cowboys. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Neil, the Cowboys have like 15 free agents that they've got to deal with. Guys like Mo Claiborne, you know. I mean,
yeah, but they've got $3.4 million of cap space, Jeff. 3.4.
And they've got so many of their own, and you always want to re-sign your own.
Yeah,
so if they got 3.4, they're not re-signing a bunch of those guys, Barry Church and those guys, unless they cut guys to you know, Jack Crawford's a free agent.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's a lot of guys out there. This is going to be a fascinating 2 days leading up to it, and then Thursday's going to be incredible.
Yeah,
I may take the day off and just tune in and listen to you.
There we go, Jeff. And the Jags, I think, will be active. Jags have got $71 million to spend. But don't forget, 2 years ago, the Jags signed Davon House, Jared Odrick, and Julius Thomas. And within 2 years, they've got rid of a lot of them. So it doesn't always end up as a long-term fix. But it will be fascinating. And it all gets going at 9 o'clock UK time on Thursday. So I'll be live blogging all through the night to get you through that. Jeff, until next week, and I know next week we're going to have a bunch of stuff to talk about, because free agency will be in full swing. I think actually we might suspend State of the Franchise for a week and just dig right into the first 4 or 5 days of free agency. What do you reckon?
I just think it's another indication of why there is an unbelievable need in the universe to have 2 inside the huddles a week.
Well, there you go. I'm happy to end on that positive note. And with that, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.